Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Pezzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. I am back from the Morningstar Conference, which was terrific. It is terrific. It's a great conference. First one I've gone to. I have a number of conferences I go to every year, and this year I had an opportunity, time-wise, as well as one of our vendors said, hey, if you want to go, we have an extra ticket to go. So, obviously it's still expensive to go to Chicago and to take a week off, but, I thought, yeah, why not? Let's give it a try. So it was a terrific week. And it is, and Chicago is a marvelous city, of course. For those of you who have visited, it's a fun city to go visit. I couldn't stand to live there. It's just way too big for me and very difficult to get around. I don't think it's difficult to get around in the main areas. What I'm saying is it'd be difficult to live there and try to get everything done in a day. So it's just too busy for me, but what a great, fun place to go. But that's not why you tuned in, right? You tuned in to try to find out, so you went to the conference. What in the world did you learn? Well, these are always difficult things. And I know for those of you who have been in any industry for a long time, you understand exactly what I mean. It's difficult to define what it is that you pulled away. What was the great learning experience? And it's really, and sometimes it's just that it's not you're actually learning something specific while you're there. It clears your head to be away from all of the day-to-day things that you're doing, in particular the noise of the market. And when you're away from the noise of the market, you're just trying to think about things, is when real growth sometimes occurs. Well, I just want to share a couple of thoughts, and there were a lot of little thoughts that ran through my little head while I was there. But one of the things that struck me is how difficult it is for all of the managers that spoke. And most of them are not talking about their, you buy this and you buy that. But in the whole thought process, for example, Michael Hasenstab was a great Templeton Funds bond manager, global manager, manages, I don't know, $100 billion plus dollars. It's a crazy, crazy number in global bonds. And so he does, of course, in his presentation, talk a lot about different areas that they like and don't like. And it's fascinating to me how some of the things were very uniform, whether they were within the same panel or they were the next day. So people were talking about some of the uniform. Where are the bargains in the world? What is the bargain area? And how difficult it is to find real bargains. There really aren't any. I think that's the, if you will, the big takeaway. There are no real big bargains out there. Everything is higher priced. So often for me, and this is kind of I've tried to relay this as a thought in all of investing, is to always be asking ourselves what's cheap and what's dear. And so what in the world is cheap? In a classic sense, nothing is really cheap. We get cheap when we get into terrible bear markets. Terrible bear markets. But we don't have a terrible bear market in anything. So there really isn't anything cheap. So cheap is a relative term to whatever else is available, right? So if we have little else that has value, maybe something else, because it's not overpriced, is the cheapest. So really the question isn't what's cheap and what's dear. How about what's the cheapest relative and what is the dearest relative. Those are the things we want to overweight and underweight. Now, what was interesting is again, some of those cheaper areas continued to surface. And I thought this particular insight was one for me that was very important, because we hear how constantly how important China is, right? And it is. I don't think that that's just noise, but it's constantly talking about how important China is. But the China slowdown and all of the shadow banking system problems that are there, those types of things. Now, we hear those headlines, and they're repeated often by money managers that obviously don't even work in those areas, but that's okay, because they're on Wall Street and they're worried about whatever it is. And if that's China, then they throw out things like shadow banking, stuff like that, that makes it sound like they're students of China. What I really want to hear from are people that invest in China, and in particular people who are buying their bonds like Hasenstab, or selling them, not owning them, either way. But I would like that kind of a real deep dive, deeper than a headline. And that, to me, is one of the things that you get at these types of conferences. You get people who are not trying to make a soundbite for a camera. They're not trying to not make not get in trouble like Obama making a political speech. No. They're not. They're out there thoroughly telling us what their opinions are in different parts of the world. And with a great deal of knowledge. It doesn't make them right all the time, but it is something that's very, very important to get this kind of depth. What really is going on in China? Well, it didn't just stop there. Several other people talked about the news in China being way overblown. Excuse me. Way overblown. So we have a situation in China where everybody is so, the empty cities, they're going to have a hard landing. The real estate is collapsing. The shadow banking system is collapsing. And then when you see what some of the numbers are, some of the real numbers, right? Well, how big is the shadow banking system? Well, it's tiny. It's tiny, tiny, tiny. And so a couple of them going under is really irrelevant. But it makes headlines, right? The real estate situation over there is so a couple businesses, a couple banks are going out of business, which, of course, the ruling party there is letting happen. And they don't always let those things happen, do they? So it makes people a little bit nervous. So as we look at a place like China and really dig into some of the numbers, it's kind of an optimistic look. It kind of made me pretty positive going forward, not just on China, but economically. And so then when you also have these folks talk about things we don't understand, and nobody can know how they are going to evolve, but what's it really like? I mean, what in China, what's it really like to try to start a business, to run a business, and the changes that they're theoretically making that we hear mumblings about? They're not going to be able to make that transition over, and when some people say they're becoming more transparent and that's good, and others say that that's terrible, what does that look like? If you're really out over there, what does that look like? And the transparency is very different. And when they talk about the politics of what's going on in China, it's hopeful. They are opening up. They are not. They're letting the natural level or more natural level of interest rates come about. They're not trying to make or allow state-run industries that are terrible to survive, to lend them more money, to compete against businesses that don't have that kind of access. So access to capital is evening out there. It's not an overnight process, but it isn't going to be a decade-long process either. It's happening. So as we continue to have availability from entrepreneurs, well, who are they? Where do they come from, you know, in a communist country? Well, the Chinese always have been. Apparently, they're very, very entrepreneurial. I mean, I guess I kind of suspected that, but when people who spend enormous amounts of time there and understanding there talk about how entrepreneurial they are, and if state-run industry would just get out of their way, and they are now, you have to believe that that's going to be a very big positive. So what does this all mean? I mean, does it mean we go throw money at China? Not necessarily. But as we go through the checklist of the world, how it's going to melt down, according to the bears, and of course that list grows and grows and grows, you check a few things off, and then you find something else to keep throwing it on it. So I think it always depends on how we see the world. If we always see the world, which most human beings do, as about ready to die, then you're always going to have all the new problems. But this is a big problem that people have talked about for a long time. And I think you can probably check it off. Because remember, this isn't new, what I'm talking about. This has been going on for decades. You know, as one of the speakers talked about, you know, the people who've been bearish on China and talking about the how it just wasn't going to work, this great recovery, this great change that China was making, wasn't going to work, have been really, 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 really wrong for a long, long time. And I don't know when we stop believing them. But I guess if you're a bear, you don't ever have to say you're sorry. You really don't. Do you? Getting it wrong, you know, that the you know, prophecy.org, getting it wrong all the time doesn't mean you can't write about the next prophecy, which is that the U.S. dollar is going to collapse on July 1st. I know we're coming up. So next week, Tom Brown will be driving around town seeing if dollars still work. We'll have him call in periodically and let us know if different stores in town are taking dollars. My guess is they are. But it sure has not stopped, obviously, thousands of, who knows, tens of thousands of people going to a website called prophecy.org about a bill that nobody has talked about. Nobody, except prophecy.org. Not an inch of ink for Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Barron's. None. It's an amazing thing when you really think about it. Absolutely astounding. Not an inch of ink. But I digress. The bears will always be around, and they will always have a logical argument for why things aren't going to work. But I think it's important that we step back sometimes and say, you know, this is just the same thing from the same people, told a little different way as to why China won't work, why it's all phony, all the corporate profits are phony. It's the same people that have kept people out of markets for, well, decades, buying gold, precious metals. Amazing. Little pretty bricks. Woohoo! Instead of buying the great corporations of the world, we hide behind that, and then they sell on their websites and their doomsday newsletters or gold bug newsletters. They sell gold. Fear. It's a monster. It's a monster. We have to conquer. And I think sometimes, you know, you go away to these, like I say, you go away to a conference like this, you get immersed in great thought. You talk to people that are really there, that are really smart. and you have time to get away from the noise of the day-to-day and think. It's a very important process for me, no doubt, no doubt, but fun. And it's also, you know what, it's equally fun to come home. It really is. It's just awesome to get back in the saddle and get back in your routine, isn't it? Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIVO. Would love to talk with you, need to talk with you today. Do you know, today, I forgot all this entire set of notes from the conference. So I'm kind of having to wing it, which is good, because then next week I'll go back in. I'll go, oh, yeah, I forgot to talk about that. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff for the next several weeks I'll be talking about. I won't be able to think of everything that was in there, but it's sitting right like on my kitchen table. I can't believe it. I know exactly where it is. It's just sitting right there, and I just ran out the door today and left it. But I got other stuff here, but still, my point is I've got a lot of those notes, so I need your help. I need your calls at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petsofinancial.net if you prefer email, dave@petsofinancial.net, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. And I hope last week you enjoyed the tape with Pastor Paul Hatfield. I thought his insights were terrific, and how incredibly important on all levels money is. It's so incredibly important, and therefore it's incredibly important we get it right. That we get it right. We deal with money correctly. You know, I am blown away. You know, I talked about that at the conference, and how this, you know, the search for value and trying to find values, and it's really more of a relative term, relative values, because we're not off of a huge bear market where prices are down in certain things, but they are in certain areas. Don't get me wrong. There's obviously a huge bear market going on in materials. You know, iron ore, things like that, you know, just the raw stuff. There always is something out there. But valuations are really a relative term, and I always think of this bathtub of money, you know, sloshing around the world. And it's going to park where it feels the safest with a reasonable return. Now, when we say safe, again, back to that point, I am going to spend the rest of my career trying to redefine for people risk, because at this conference, and I'll talk about it in the education segment at the beginning of the next hour, that we're still getting this so wrong in my mind. Either I have completely lost my mind, and that's a real possibility, but it caused me literally to stop and question for a good period of time my whole thought process, because I was at a panel discussion, and again, I don't want to get into the details of it, but a panel discussion talking about income planning in retirement. And it's the same old, same old. Same old thing. And even in questions afterwards, one-on-one, I felt like I was talking to the wind. And I get that. I get that. When we do a lot of academic things, and you try to pump the numbers in, and this is the way they spit out, we don't want to change. People don't want to change. Nobody does. It's this whole thought process of how this is the way we've always done it. But it's not the same world. So I'll talk a little bit about that and some of the disappointments there. But we're searching for values throughout the world, always searching, and this giant bathtub is going around. And so even though we're trying to redefine, if you will, what risk really is it immediate price risk, or is it the risk of running out of money? That inflation erodes the purchasing power so severely that you can't do what you want to do, that you run out of money before you are dead. Not a pleasant thing. Just not. So in this goal that we're trying to do, we're also trying to then put the money where we get some kind of reasonable return. In other words, where are the values? So it's a relative term. So as we look around, it's a very simple, straightforward thing to me. Why does the market keep going higher? I don't know. Corporate profits are at all-time highs. Dividend payouts are at all-time highs. Corporate balance sheets are the best they've ever been. Stock buybacks, highest they've ever been. It's just such a mystery why the market would be at all-time highs. Because what we forget all of the time is these are real businesses. And that's why it sounds so simple for those of us who understand what you're doing is buying a piece of an ongoing business is what stock is. That a lot of people just simply don't understand that. They think it's some kind of a weird New York financial game. Yeah, they maybe even get it's not a casino, but they don't understand that they're buying a business. And so the best way to think about it is, would you like to own the whole business? If so, at that price, at what price would you want to own the whole business? And that would help you determine, well, yeah, I think I will buy a few shares, a small, tiny percentage of that business. And instead of getting caught up in the idea that now we have to care what that business trades at every second, instead of the underlying fundamentals of, hey, you know what? They really are selling, if you like the Johnson & Johnson, more drugs. More Band-Aids all over the world this quarter than they did last quarter. I think the company's worth more money. Now, if the psychos on Wall Street want to say it's worth less, I might want to buy more because their business is simply improving. Instead, we only see these things as this day-to-day fluctuation and define risk that way, which is nutty. But as we look around the world, what businesses, what assets are growing? Stocks. Are bonds growing? No, they never do. Okay, well, do they offer a good return in exchange for the fact that they don't grow? No. They don't offer a good return. They offer a terrible return. Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe I don't want to play there. Well, so maybe I should just sit on cash. Cash earns a negative return, a negative real return, which is all that matters. After inflation, what do you have left? After taxes, after inflation, what do you have left? Less than I had before. Do I need to explain that further? No, we're not going to do that. Real estate's not terribly liquid, so we can't do a lot. We can do some, and money's moving there, but not the trillions in the bathtub. Well, what about gold? Really? It's super expensive to buy. We have to guard it, and it produces nothing. So its real return is negative, unless we find somebody that wants something that produces nothing. Is difficult to buy, expensive to buy, but they want to buy it for more than we paid for it for some really weird reason. That sounds really weird and speculative and risky. I don't think a lot of money is going to go there, actually, and it won't. So relatively, stocks are really super cheap. Still. And we think of them wrong because we think of them not as the great corporations of the world of which I want to own. No. I think we think of them as pieces of paper that we trade and hopefully, I don't know, some kind of weird financial game and hopefully I'll win a couple shekels in the game. Our number is 580. We got to take a break for Fox News. 580-5436. 580-KIDO is our number. It is dave@petsofinancial.net, and I do need your phone call. So give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place.
580-KIDO. Still looking for our callers. You know, that it really is a, would be great. Also, though, if you prefer, seriously, Dave at PetsoFinancial.net is just fine. You know, it's interesting as we look at this puzzle to me, this tax inversion. Now, to help people understand what this is, and one of the things that's really been this weird driver, not weird, but, well, it's weird because it's weird that this president won't deal with it. It makes no sense. But I don't know what they deal with. I honestly don't. So that part to me is always a puzzle. But the tax inversion, because the United States has one of the highest, if not the highest, corporate tax rates in the country, there is this idea, it's happening, where companies will buy foreign companies who have nothing more than a foreign address, frankly, because now they can avoid the U.S. taxes, which makes it a huge benefit. In other words, they can repatriate the cash back to the United States without having it taxed to death by buying a foreign counterpart. Yeah, really. So now because of idiotic tax policy, and it is idiotic, I mean, when you stop and think, the United States having the highest corporate tax rates in the world, well, that's not, well, why would corporations be here? They won't. They aren't. They're using foreign addresses to avoid taxes. Is this dumb? This isn't hard. It's not rocket science. Third graders could figure this out. Now, I'm sorry. I don't mean to put down the third graders. It's incredible. But this is really, now, okay, so I'm frustrated. Ooh, big deal. But let's turn this around. It not only means money's going offshore, that's fine, but now let's think about it from the stock market perspective. This is one of the reasons we're seeing these active mergers. These huge mergers are going on. And so keep your eye on this. I think it's going to continue. There's no reason it shouldn't. You know when it stops? It stops when the president comes up with an idea, because all he's done is veto every idea out of Congress. So for those of you who say, no, Congress does the tax law, fine. But they never do tax law without the president coming along, do they? Because he'll veto it. Or it'll never get through the Senate, so who cares? So unless you have bipartisan support for something, you're not. And they've done nothing. I mean, what are we, 6 years into this president? This continues to go on. So it's an incredible opportunity as we think about this long term to keep the money, repatriate it back on shore. But that's what you're going to hear. You'll hear this constant talk of tax inversion, okay? Tax inversion. Now you know what it is. Let's go ahead and go to the phone. Let's go to Jim in Boise. Jim, thanks for calling.
Morning again, Dave. How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Good. You convinced me to call again. Let me be the first to wish you a merry first day of summer.
Well, is this the first day of summer?
Yep.
I can't believe I missed it. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You may be a couple hours late. I think it's already happened.
Okay.
This morning.
Okay.
And now, from now on, the days start getting shorter.
That's right.
So,
Not all bad. I mean, we have a nice, I like the long days, but not quite as long as they are. Yeah.
True. I mean, for the last couple of weeks, they've been getting too long because I've been, you know, I wake up pretty much when the sun comes up.
Yep.
So, when the, you know, like I get up at 6 o'clock. And if I'm waiting for your show, it's like an eternity. And then in the winter, it's a lot better, you know. I mean, I can hibernate till 10 o'clock or something. But
there you go.
Of course, I don't have to be a productive member of the economic society, so.
Well, there you are.
But, you know, the thing is, people being hesitant to, invest, especially, you know, the market's going up and everything. And it may not be just total fear, you know. There's a few expressions we've been taught way back, like you've said, you know, by our grandparents knew it, right?
Right.
And it usually applies with scams, right?
Yes.
It's like If it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Right.
Money doesn't grow on trees. Okay, now here you have the stock market going up, and people are getting a bit, you know, wary, let's put it, you know.
Sure.
And so, I mean, that's just kind of a normal, you know, what's wrong with this picture kind of a thing.
Well, you know, Jim, I think that's a really valid point, but I think it's we have to look at it also in the context of the fact that this they've been wary of it for the last 5 years. So the market has now tripled, and they're not in it, and that drives people absolutely batty.
True. Now, it was great for me. I mean, I loved it. Well, for one thing, you know, I kind of get a kick out of everybody pissing and moaning, you know. And, well, the thing is, okay, if you invest in the stock market and you lose your ass, you're not the only one, right?
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of shared pain. So, but you know, I mean, granted, you know, a few years ago when, I mean, things were down and people were singing the blues, I mean, that was the time to buy. Now, you know, I want to buy some more stock now, but the, you know, the stock market keeps going up, and that's kind of, it's not a good thing for buyers.
No, it's not a good thing for buyers. You're absolutely right. What do I do with fresh cash that comes in? I have to say, Jim, it's a much more difficult thing to do right now. It certainly is. It's much more difficult to put money to work than really at any time that I can remember in my whole career. It's just much more difficult. They're because uniformly across the board, prices are not cheap except for in emerging markets. And you simply can't put all the money there.
And this has to go with, you know, you've got to think long term, right? You may say, you know, you may be paying kind of a premium price, but if it's a good company, then it'll be worth it in the long run.
Correct. And that's exactly the point. You just have to stop at some point in time and quit guessing where the top is and quit saying, you know, trees can't grow to the sky. I get that they can't grow to the sky, but every time we get a 5% pullback, people aren't buying. If you get a 10% pullback, they didn't buy in 2011. They stayed out because the noise is so loud. It's so, oh, my gosh, this is it. We're going to tumble again. That they go, well, maybe I better wait a little longer. And then they wait again. So even though you hate to buy at all-time highs, the best time to buy is now. It always has been in the market. If you buy quality and you buy globally, then the best time to buy has always been now.
Now, when the market's going down, people either are afraid to buy at that point, or they're thinking maybe they'll go down further and I can get a better deal.
Bingo. And then they keep waiting, and then a market turn snaps back, and, well, I'm not going to buy now. I'll wait in the next step, and they keep waiting. But the thing that you hear now is this constant, and the reason I continue to say it is because that's what's happened for a long time. And that's this everything's phony. It's all phony. It's Fed money, and as soon as they stop, you know, start tapering, it's going to go, well, they started tapering. They started a year ago and are now down to less than half of the bond buying they were doing.
So well, are they printing much money anymore?
Oh, yeah, they print every day.
Yeah.
The government prints every day because they won't stop spending. They will not stop spending. And so and everybody's all saying, oh, gosh, look how good, you know, our budget deficit is declining. What, from $1 trillion a year that this president has to only hundreds of billions in deficit? And that's great. And we haven't paid off any of that debt. And if interest rates go up, the $17 trillion becomes really super expensive. So it is a box. It is a terrible box that we've put in. Put for our grandchildren down the road. No question.
Interest rates to go up. Now, you know, it almost, if you're of a conspiratorial turn of mind, you might even say that the Fed is in cahoots or collusion with the stock market. Because, you know, they say something good like, we're not going to increase interest rates, and the stock market goes up. Now, is that good for for everybody or just the stock market?
It's good for everybody overall, and the answer is they are. I mean, they definitely want the market to do well because some of that excess money finds its way back into society, back into the economy. So higher asset prices also help us stay out of the deflationary spiral, and that's really what the Fed's been fighting, is the fact that they can't kickstart it no matter how low rates are going, and that feels a lot like deflation, and that, of course, is devastating to the economy. So they've been fighting that, and so higher asset prices, meaning higher bond prices, higher stock prices, does not bother them at all. They like that. They want the prices to be higher. It helps fight deflation. So, yes, they are in that sense in cahoots. They're in a sense they do want stock prices to be high. They don't want them to be down. So they're happy to have them up.
Yeah, just so long as it's good for the overall economy. And just so long as it's not a bubble. It's like what Greenspan said, something about removing the punch bowl when people were getting drunk.
Yes.
So, you know.
No, when this thing gets turned around, I think that's part of the issue. But interest rates all over the world, this is one of the things you have to stop sometimes and look. We're talking about a situation globally now where if you look overseas, meaning just to Europe, I'm not talking about some crazy place like Japan where I have no idea why anybody's buying the 0.5% 10-year treasuries, but they are. Somehow they are in Japan because, you know, the Japanese are buying them. But when we say, you know, there's no way a 2.6% 10-year treasury, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. It's like, okay, and where else are you going to put money? Are you going to put it in Spain? Because Spain actually has like a 3% 10-year treasury. Well, no. I mean, they've got 25% unemployment. I wouldn't want to touch that. Oh, okay, well, here's another idea for you. You know, when you go to Ireland, they're around 2. Why would I do that? Germany, 2. UK, 2. So when we look at it competitively, I don't see how rates go higher, you know, unless they go higher globally. So we have to look at the whole globe because money, again, flows like this bathtub all around the world, not just here.
I've heard that Ireland has the best tax rates. That's why corporations are going to Ireland.
Yes, they do. Yeah, many of them are. That's a part of what's happening here. So many companies you think are U.S. companies. I saw a funny one the other day was Chicago Iron and Steel, I think is what it's called. Chicago Iron or Bridge and Steel, that's what it is. And they don't build bridges and they don't make steel. And they're not in Chicago. They're actually in Texas, and they're not even a U.S. firm. I believe they're an Irish firm. You know, but of course they do all their business over here. But why do they do that? Well, because our stupid tax code. That's why we force them to do it. There's nothing tax evasion about it. It's totally legal. Go ahead and do it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing tax evasion about you making a donation to a charity and then writing it off.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all they're doing is they're figuring out how to get around the tax code because we're that dumb. In the United States, we decided it's just a great idea to push all these corporations overseas. Anyway, yep. Silly. All right, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you much. Have a great summer.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. A Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you so much for joining us. Hey, don't forget, in our education segment next hour, I'm going to be talking about retirement income planning. And again, it was one of my biggest disappointments about the Morningstar Conference, and I'll share that with you as to why. And again, to be thinking about what do we do in retirement planning, because it's a tough deal. All right, so let me grab an email here, and thank you for that. By the way, the email here is dave@petsofinancial.net. Dave at Petso, P-E-T-S-O, not the sauce, petsofinancial.net. Dave, I just finished listening to your podcast from last week, and I totally agree with your philosophy on social investing. By the way, the podcasts are available a couple different ways. You can go to our website. There's only back four, or you can just simply go to iTunes, okay? Go to iTunes, put in Petso, we pop up. But you can do the little, I don't know if it's a subscription, or, you know, it's a regular. You just put it, I want to download automatically. It'll download automatically, and then you can keep them all, or they can keep them all for you there. So that's the other way. One financial talk show host last week suggested that an investor would be far better to support social causes of his or her own choice directly than to try to do it through their investing activities. Even if you do something as simple as buy an S&P index, there is a good chance that you will end up owning a few shares of stock of some company that investors consider objectionable. Also, a green company to one person might not be green to another, or social responsible, or whatever you use. I know of some companies that most people would never consider green or socially responsible, but I disagree with them and can show them why. It's all in the eyes of the beholder, as they say. Dave in Boise. Dave, thank you. It's a good point. Now, let me take just 1 second here as we wind down this hour to refresh the thought process on that. I'd received a lengthy email, and part of the discussion from the email was not just on the equity-indexed annuities, and this person was attempting to support them, but it was also talking about social investing and how buying insurance companies and fixed investments was then therefore somehow better than equities. And of course, that's completely wrong. And it's not. And this brings up another point on the social responsibility thing. But if you take something as simple as a tobacco company, Philip Morris hasn't raised money in my whole life through a stock offering. They continue to buy back stock. They don't raise money, but they do raise money on bonds. So it's a complete opposite. And so for people who are investing in fixed investments, that's not socially responsible. It's the opposite. They think they are, but they're not. And worse, it doesn't make any sense. Give money directly to causes. Don't worry about it in your investing, because it can lead you to making poorer investments or driving yourself nuts trying to figure out what fund or what your values are, because your values might be completely different. I saw several socially responsible places there, and I've had dealings with them before. And many of them will say things like, well, don't talk about this to the people who are conservative, because they would not like these companies over here, because they have strong policies towards giving money to abortion agencies and things like that. So don't talk about that. And then if they're on the left, you talk about it's just crazy. No, we're making it up to sell something. So find those companies you like or don't like, but that's fine. But don't drive yourself crazy in investing. Thanks for the email. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys live next hour. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's place to talk.
Drop the top on that perfect certified pre-owned BMW convertible at Peterson BMW Certified Pre-Owned Sale. Every certified pre-owned convertible BMW has been rigorously inspected and comes with a 24/7 roadside assistance. Starting now, you can take home a certified pre-owned BMW with financing as low as 1.9% on most 2011 and 2012 models for up to 60 months. Drive in luxury knowing you're covered with a protection plan for up to 6 years or 100,000 miles. Experience the thrill of owning the ultimate driving machine and take advantage of Peterson BMW's certified pre-owned sale today. Visit us on the corner of Fairview and Maple Grove in Boise or online at petersonbmw.com.
After all incentives, OAC, plus taxes, title, license, and...
Dave Pezzo, and of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. They're not the station. They are not my broker-dealer. They are my opinions. And if we talk about stocks, we talk about a sector, it doesn't mean you should own them at all. It doesn't mean you should sell it if we talk negatively about it. I don't know what you own. I don't know what the objectives are, the tax consequences, all of those things that seem normal. But there are so many things out there that are screaming and yelling for your attention to buy, 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 sell, 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 or do some option thingy-mabobber, or trailing stops, because that really works. We all know that. You can have all of the stock market returns with no risk. Really? I wonder why Goldman Sachs and all the others don't just put all their money there. Huh? Why Warren Buffett is so dumb not to just be involved in the market with no risk. Sheesh. They're just dumb, dumb, dumb. All right, enough of that nonsense. I want to talk about retirement planning in our education segment. Income planning and retirement. Okay, now this is big. It's a big, giant, humongous area. But I got to thinking about it because there was a panel discussion I couldn't wait to go to. I wanted to hear the latest studies. This is the best thinking that's out there, right? I mean, this is a big conference, right? I mean, it's big. It's big, 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 big. So I'm expecting the best of the best, and that's what they're bringing. And the best of the best at running numbers, but I'm not sure anybody's thinking, and so I want to kind of roll that back. But let's go through the thought process first, initially, and what's going on with income planning, and why it's so important to redefine risk and all these other things that we are that holds our thinking down, or at least why I think it does, okay? And I'm trying to examine if I'm just crazy too, okay? So let's go through this. What do I mean by income planning retirement? What we're talking about is cost of living adjusted income all the days of our life, no matter how long we live. Fair? Now, many ways that's expressed, so you can run it through the mathematical calculation because we don't know when we're going to die, it would be 30 years. That's a normal, approximate normal joint life expectancy of a couple is 30 years in retirement, assuming a mid-early 60s retirement. And what we consider to be a successful outcome for those numbers would be, you know, a prediction of, 90%. 90% in our Monte Carlo simulation. What's a Monte Carlo simulation? It's a computer-driven program that you punch in all the possible outcomes, million different combinations, and bloop, tells you with 90% probability you can take out 4%. So the number is 4. That's what's been typically the number, is around 4. Do we think it's 4.5? And there's many people out there arguing, well, we just think intellectually you need to take it down because interest rates are lower. A reasonable argument. Maybe it's 3. But here is my argument. The world is different. And we need to address the fact that putting in an 8% return as a possibility in a Monte Carlo simulation is just dumb. It's not a possibility. It's an impossibility. I want removed things that can't happen. And I don't mean, the probability is really small. Fine, put it in. But there is no chance of that happening with interest rates at 2.6 on a 10-year treasury. None, none, none. So when we have that, we have to stop and go, this can't happen. Now, can it happen 10 years from now? Absolutely, interest rates could go higher. I think it's improbable that we'll be lined up with an 8% at that time, but it is still very possible. Okay? So I get later on. But how can we put that in the model today? The answer is you can't. You can't. The model's broken. But nobody is talking about how do we fix it. Okay, so let's go again, backing up just a little bit. I'll come right back to this discussion. But as we're thinking about this and we define risk in our understanding of income planning, okay, we get caught in this game of, we want to have our money, risk-free because we don't have time to come back. What do you mean you don't have time to come back? You've got 30 years of inflation-adjusted income needs. What are you talking about? Well, if the market comes down, we don't have any time to come back. What are you talking about? You have a need for increased income for the next 30 years. What are you talking about? What, you think you're going to take it all out next year? Well, no, that's not what I mean. Yes, you do. If you're talking about price rather than value, the value is, are we going to have an increasing income? Well, the great corporations of the world have done that for decade after decade after decade, for all the days of my life, all the days of my dad's life, all the days of my grandpa's life. Well, but the price will move. Yeah, that's what I mean. Because are you taking it all out next year? No. 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 Then quit defining risk as a price movement. Period. That's all we do. And the academics do the same thing. Drives me crazy. I can't even ever have a discussion about, but what about the risk of not having adequate money? Well, but that's part of the risk, because that would be if the prices went down and then you ran out. No, that's not the same thing. It's not even remotely. So we are caught in this place now where we have lots and lots and lots of shows out there telling you that you can have stock market returns with no risk, and that's absolutely not true. Your grandmother knows it's not true. She told you it wasn't true. Everybody knows it's not true. Everybody in their heart is just screaming that's not true. So we know it, but we seek it because of fear. So fear is overriding all of that, and then when we get into this, we also have to understand this part of the income planning, okay? when we talk about, especially, well, it is all with annuities of various kinds, a guaranteed income of, say, 5% for life. Well, that's fine. Or 6% for life. Or X amount of bonus on the income side for life. What does that really mean? So we ran the numbers, okay? And it's better than a 10-year treasury. By, you know, that much. But when you start drawing out 5% income for life, 10 years from now, if you live for 30 years, then you've drawn it all out over a 30-year period. If you haven't, if you don't live that long, sorry. Guess it didn't work out so good for you. But that's okay. Let's suppose you did. Then the rate of return is 3%. And you've locked up your money for life for 3. So without a chance to do even better, it makes no sense. None. None to me. If you're really all that concerned about the world, you can go buy a bond. Go buy 10-year treasuries and let them roll over. Here's my best guess. Rates will go up someday, and you might get more than 2.6. I think it's a bad strategy, but my point is it's a heck of a lot better than dumping it into an annuity on some phony income promise. Now, why is all that important? We have to understand that when we're talking about income planning in retirement, we have to have cost of living adjusted income. So having a fixed income is death. I've never once had somebody walk into my office and say, ah, our objective in retirement is we would like to have a lower standard of living every year we're alive. I've been doing this for 35 years. That hasn't happened yet. But that's precisely what people do. If what they do is they fix their income, then they have stated or non-stated, I want to have a lower standard of living every year of the rest of my life, and hopefully I'll die before it really gets bad. Because it will get bad. Really, really bad. Is it more expensive than it was 10 years ago? Well, duh, Dave. Okay, so do you think it will be 10 years from now then? Duh. Huh? Do you think it will be in 20 years more expensive to live than it is today? Was it 20 years ago? Well, yeah. A ridiculous difference. Yes, by tiny fractions, it takes away a little bit every year until it is a devastating problem. So we can talk about risk. Let's go to risk. I don't want to take risk. It's so scary. It's so because we're defining it wrong. We've got to redefine risk. What are you trying to do? Cost of living adjusted income all the days of my life. Then quit focusing only on price. Please. But Procter & Gamble could fall from $80 a share to $70, and then I would. Then what am I going to do? They'll raise their dividend again, like they had for 57 years in a row. From 1970 alone, from 1 cent per share to 64 cents a share per quarter today. 64-fold increase. During that time, multiple years, the price has declined. As the income, the value, has increased by more than 3 times the inflation rate. And they make amazing stuff like soap. Soap. That's what they do. Earth-shattering stuff like that. And diapers. And get this. Razor blades. Amazing. No, they didn't invent the computer or some stuff like that. No, no, no. Just brands. Consumer brand. No, I'm not selling you on Procter & Gamble. Think of the great corporations of the world like that. That year after year, regardless of price, why do we define our very net worth, our existence, our concern on the psychotic price movement? And it is psychotic. It makes no sense day to day. Does Procter & Gamble's business change? Did they sell a lot less Tide and diapers in Brazil today because the market price went down a dollar a share? Of course not. Doesn't change a lick. So we have to redefine it. Okay? Let me roll this back. Tie it together. Here's what happened at the meeting. So Warren Stowe's got all these people together, and we're talking about the 4% rule, and they're all know their stuff, right? One guy, I've run 6,500 different, examples. So I ask him about it. So are you running examples now? How do you run examples that really show that we're in a zero interest rate world? What do we do to change our models today? It's all, we don't do that. No, I don't know what you do to that. I don't know how you do that. You can't really do that. Slow and steady wins the race or whatever. And it's like he's just mumbling. And go, no, that's not the world we're in. What do we do? And he said, well, what do you think we should do? And I said, why don't we look at the great, what should we do instead of the treasuries, the 1%, 2% treasuries, because, of the risk level. Again, defining risk only as price movement. And this is the experts in the industry. So I'm just, my head's just spinning as I'm sitting there arguing this point, of which, by the way, three other people are gathered around now and listening and going, absolutely. Now, and one guy steps up. He says, yes, I've owned stocks, dividend paying stocks my whole life. Paid more, way more, way more, way more. The guy's 80 years old, was talking about it. As a better income alternative. Beautiful, beautiful. New thinking, we've got to think. So it was very disappointing. I was looking for some different thought process as to what we do and how we position. Here's what I'm thinking. Okay, and I'll deal with this more next week, but I'm going to give you just a hint. Okay, I'm trying to make this so it's easier to, if you will, institutionalize. I know it sounds that sounds really like nobody cares. No, that's not true. But by institutionalizing it, you can broaden the appeal, because what you have to do is you have to create a systematic approach to it. Or you can only do, 1,000 of them. You can't do 1,000,000 of them. So you have to think of it institutional. How do we put this into a model, a computer model, to try to make it work? So I'm working with a couple of different things. But basically it works like this. What we have to be thinking of is, of course, investing in and overweighting in what's cheap in the world, and then we're harvesting gains from what's dear. So as markets move higher, the only objective we have is not to outperform the market or anything like that. It's simply to have your money outlast you. Correct? That's the objective in income planning. But we have to have it grow. So if we're really trying to do 4%, maybe even 5%, and we want to have a cost of living adjustment, we're trying to make 8% in a world that is very volatile, and we're still dealing with this discussion. So all the account value goes down, and now we have to pull money out of all these different buckets. No, you don't. Be selective with the bucket we pull from. That's all. So we do have to have some cash and some short-term, say, bonds. We have to when the market's down. And we leave those alone when the market goes up. We harvest the gains from those different silos, if you will. And it's not just the market. It's not that you just buy the S&P, but we got international, small cap, value, growth, all these things that are across the board, multiple different ones, real estate, maybe even some little sector bets on oil and energy, things like that, that make some sense at various times because they're particularly cheap. Then when they pop, they can pop, and they can pop 30% or more, particularly these little sectors, in a year. And so, boom, you harvest it. You don't sit around and predict it's going to the moon. You just take it. So that's a very broad picture, but we're going to keep working on this, and I'll talk some more about it next week. But right now, we've got to take a quick break. Greg, please hang on. Well, yeah, I want to talk risk with you, too. So I see we've got a caller. And we do have three other lines available at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Bottom line, we have to redefine risk, don't we? Is it really that the price drops? Do we really think of it that way? Like, what if I needed all my money next year? We don't. You need 1 year's income next year. No, it's a 30-year cost of living adjusted. We have to have growing streams of income. And if we can't get past that, redefining risk and tolerate fluctuations, then we're always going to be buying equity indexed annuities and running out of money, running out of lifestyle. We're always going to do that. We're always going to go out and hide in gold. And we're going to chase the latest thing. We're going to chase stocks when the whole wide world looks good. and stocks are about to correct. This is what we're going to do, is keep living in fear, all about prices, when it has nothing to do with your long-term objective. Our number is 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is the number, 580-KIDO. Love to visit with you. Come on. I know it's the first day of summer, but thanks to Jim telling us that. But, you know, not everybody's out, and everybody who is out and about has a cell phone these days. And we also, because we have cell phones, you can also email us right on your phone. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. Right now, let's go to Greg in Boise. Greg, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. It's Craig, actually.
Oh, Craig.
I guess I was listening to your discussion on risk, and I think when people hear the word risk, they automatically feel fear that something bad is going to happen. And from my analysis of risk and study of risk, risk is just trying to determine what could happen at what time. And it doesn't necessarily go to the negative. And I think that's why people are motivated by fear a lot of the times and reactionary when they hear the word risk or risk assessment.
Mm-hmm. That's a fair point. It is. It's a natural negative. So I probably should approach it with a different thought process. But
I understand you were covering a lot of ground there. I just wanted to bring up the point that when people hear risk, they don't have to be afraid. They just have to try and understand what is the degree to which something might take place. I mean, that's really the substitution for the word of risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and also when we define it or think about it, what I'm trying to get across is this idea of redefining what risk is. It, because it's not this singular thing of price movement. It's... I think the most important part of the risk equation is this. What are the chances, to your point, what is the chance of me not having cost of living adjusted income the rest of my life? That is the risk, the chance of that unfolding. That, to me, is the bigger question.
Exactly. And if you're in Social Security or some government-run program, you know, they talk about cost of living increases, but what do they give, 1% when they... What's inflation, 3 or so? I mean, so basically the more you live and the longer you live, the less money, the more money you basically don't get or lose.
Right.
And that's why I like your discussion about you need to basically earn money to beat inflation, plus you have to have money on top of inflation to actually, you know, either keep your standard of living or increase it a bit.
Right. Right, you have to. We don't have the choice, but there's so much money to be made by scaring people, and there is, because those are the products that pay the most, are the scare products. So,
are we coming up to another election again?
Yeah.
Where we scare the elderly about how everything's going to die and the volcano's going to swallow up the world if they don't vote for X party.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I know. It works. It works in politics. It works in investments as well. Is fear sells.
I'm just going to go political for a second. But there was a book that the Obama administration had all his White House staffers read. It was called Animal Spirits. And it's basically the inherent fears in people and the triggers that trigger those fears. And so those kind of tools can be used to manipulate individuals using, you know, language.
Mm.
So. Anyway.
Yeah, that's too bad, too. It is, and it is, it is. Instead of doing good, we're just going to manipulate people to our point of view.
Yeah, we just penalize everybody nowadays.
Yeah.
We don't give them, people don't get the benefit of the doubt, which is sad. It's aggressive, so.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. All right, well, thank you, Dave.
Craig, thank you, and you have a great weekend. Happy first day of summer.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. And our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIVU. I've got a free board here. We're going to take a break here for Fox News at the bottom of the hour. You can also email dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Dave Petzo on 580-KIVU, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, and if you have any comments, questions, whatever during the week, shoot them over to us at petzofinancial.com. Also, that our website has podcasts there. Amy keeps it fresh and some awesome quotes, all those, you know, quotes of the week and stuff like that. She just really does a great job keeping it up. Also, again, shoot us an email there. There's articles, there's calculators there to help you with your financial planning. So check it out. And also, if you prefer to email us here during the show, it's dave@petzofinancial.net right now. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Michael. Michael, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Very interesting show this morning.
Well, thank you.
Jim did a good job priming the pump.
He did, didn't he?
He always does.
He does. Good guy.
He's very interesting. Hey, you were talking about interest rates and the national debt, and I've got Saturday's paper here, and it says, today's paper, and it says federal funds rate 0.13. Is that what the government pays on the national debt, or do they pay like the 10-year treasury rate? What do they pay?
They pay whatever the bonds are. Okay, so if you go out and you bought a bond 10 years ago, a 30-year government bond, well, that isn't going to mature for another 20 years. So that could be getting 5-6%. I, as the years roll by, those rates have been coming down. So I'm guessing it was right around that 5-6 range on the 30-year, not the 10-year, the 30-year, 10 years ago. But if you go all the way back, of course, you're going to be getting almost up in that maybe 8% range if you go back 20 years. So there's you'll still have 10 years left. So on that debt, that's what they're paying. They're also rolling over very short term. And of course, if you and I were in charge of the Treasury, we would be obviously lengthening those maturities. We'd have to pay more today because the 90-day T-bill. So if they have 90 days, they're just rolling them over every 90 days. That's where you get this, 0.1, 0.15, 0.2%. Very little rate. They have one-year auctions. They've got three-year auctions, seven-year auctions, 10-year auctions, which is the common one. Now, interest rates for mortgages and everything else tend to be set right around that 10-year. That's why we're always, people like me, are always talking about it's a 2.6% 10-year treasury, because it kind of says this is what's going on out there in mortgage land, in buying a building and you have good credit, what you're going to pay land, right? That's what that is. That's where rates are set, is off of that. And that's the bar that sets everything. So that's why we always use the 10-year. But what does the government pay? Anywhere from 0.1, okay, to probably still in the 8% range for bonds that just haven't gone off yet that were 30-year bonds back when rates were much higher.
So they've got kind of a basket of interest rates that they use to calculate to pay the debt in. So it's not the 30.
No, it's not the 30. It's all the debt that's out, because they have all kinds of different debt. They do 90-day Treasury auctions. Gosh, once or twice a week, they do, and that's the short-term paper. That's what I think they should be lengthening out, having the maturities go much longer, because then we aren't going to be faced with a crisis if interest rates go higher, as interest rates go higher. But we will. It's just not political. Right now, they can pretend the deficit is only, because it's only $600 billion this year. It's really low. It's really coming down. But if it would go higher if we did that debt out longer term, because we would have higher interest today, okay? But hopefully we wouldn't be in a crisis position, which I'm afraid we will be, if all of our debt is rolling over in the future, is almost all short term and at higher rates. All right?
Right. So by ending the quantitative easing, is that going to lessen their control over interest rates then?
No. Actually, it increases their return, their control. Here's why. They're ending it, and so they are controlling it now, okay? So I get this, but I want you to think of it this way. What could they do from here? But they've pulled all the levers. There's nothing else to pull out of the hat, right?
Yeah, I've wondered that.
Right. So if something goes wrong, there's a shock to the economy, how do they come in and help it out, help prop it? They're already the big buyer. So by actually pulling away from the market, they could come back to the market, and that would be very helpful.
Sure.
So you see what I'm getting at?
Right.
I know exactly what you're saying, but it's really flip it over and look at the other side. We want them to have all these levers available, and then they can come in and help if they have to.
Sure.
So I want them out. We all want them out. We want the real interest rates to come back and start dealing in a real way with our real problems, which are structural.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Good.
That makes sense. Hey, I got one more question if you have time.
Quickly. Yes.
Okay. So then with the objective of an ever-increasing dividend stream,
mm-hmm.
and you always talk about Procter & Gamble,
yep.
Would somebody be smart to buy a dividend mutual fund, or I think there's like an ETF, is it like DDY
mm-hmm.
or
yeah.
something like that? Would somebody be smart to buy, you know, maybe put some of those in their portfolio?
Absolutely. I think the core of your portfolio should look like that. And I only use Procter & Gamble because everybody listening has their products in their house. Right.
Sure.
It's,
yeah.
You know, and it's not like saying, well, you know, Microsoft that invented this or that, you know, has a great software thing or whatever technology. No, everybody can relate to 100 consumer brands. They don't do anything like rocket science here. So it's not going away tomorrow. So that's why I use them. Also, they are, you know, out there 57 years in a row,
right.
increasing income. That's pretty unique. But it's not really bizarre to find 30-year companies and 40-year companies that have raised it even quicker than Procter & Gamble. But it's that's why I use it, okay? So the answer is yes, but get a basket of them so that collectively they're raising them over the years. The DVY is one way to do it. I don't prefer that at all because it's a fixed basket. But it's an easy one, a low-cost way. But I also want global. I want the global moated businesses, right? The ones globally, I don't care if it's an oil company, oil's oil. I don't care if they happen to be located overseas, which, by the way, is becoming all of the American companies and will be all the American companies unless we fix our tax system.
Right. I heard, I was watching Nightly Business Report last night, and I think it was either last night or Thursday, and there was another company that relocated to Ireland
mm-hmm.
because they have a 10% federal tax.
That's right.
I thought that was amazing. All right, Dave, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Michael, thank
Bye.
You. Bye now. And, hey, Pat, I'm sorry. I got to take a quick break. I don't want to shortchange your phone call. So please hang tough with me here. And we have three lines available at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome back, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Covering the board today, I'm just really enjoying good questions, good comments. I appreciate it very much. Right now, let's go to a very patient caller. Oh, and it's 580-KIDO. Let's give us a call. Pat, thanks for holding.
Oh, good to talk to you, Dave. First of all, I want to say that we are your clients, and we are elderly. My husband's going to be 88 next month, and I'm 77.
Well, thank you.
I would like to take issue with some of the comments that the young man made about elderly people being scared. I'm not scared. I'm mad, number one. Number two, I want to assure this young man that we have gone through months of downsizing, buying a house, selling a house, for a while paying two mortgages at one time. I am now sitting in a paid-for house, And I don't, we have no mortgage. I still have all my marbles. I'm not running around scared and worried about volcanoes. But I don't like being dumped in the same barrel with everybody. I still have all my marbles. I keep track of every dime that comes in this house and every dime that goes out.
Well, good for you. And I don't think he was putting everybody in the same bucket either. Now, that I'm just saying, okay? I think that there's a lot of people out there in the financial industry. Well, I don't think there are that prey upon people's fear, which is why people buy products that tie up their money for 15 or 20 years. Nobody would do that.
Which is why we stay with you guys.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. And but we're whether with us or whomever, I just don't want people to be living in fear and rushing out there and into products that are not going to help them, and that we misunderstand what risk is. You know, right? You know, you've had a decent length of life now, Pat, and certainly your husband has it, right? At 88, right? So,
yeah.
So we're talking about an awful lot of changes, but I really only want to focus on two of those. One is, of course, inflation that we have to bear in mind, because if you would have thought that, you know, let's say you retired at 65, or your husband retired at 65 23 years ago, you need a lot more money today than you did then. Having a fixed income would not work.
30 years ago.
Yeah, 30 years ago. That wouldn't work to have your income not going up. You just can't pay your bills. That you can't. And so you've lived it to know what you have to do. And that's number one. That's one of the things as people go through. But the other one that I think we miss so much is technology and the advancement of man and the abundance that there is out there and on this planet, that we continue to think of things in a straight line with no technological improvement. You know, it was Malthus who said 1 billion people and the world would starve. Billions later, what are we approaching, 7 billion now? People, and we have an abundance of food. Why? Because of technology. We have an abundance of clean air and clean water. When I grew up, and it wasn't, I'm almost 53. Next week I'll be 53, so might as well say 53. So I'm 53. And we're watching film strips of the orange earth and people wearing gas masks, because it was a straight line. Absolute known of what we were going to be dealing with was all of this toxic smog. Well, we're not. And when I was growing up, if you walked by the Hudson on a windy day, you would have to get further away because you didn't want to be near it in case a mist came across of that toxic water. People can swim in the Hudson today with millions more people right in and around New York. It's crazy that we worry so much about these things, but we do. But technology continues to advance, and it will continue to advance, as will inflation. And
I try to stay up with technology. Every time I buy a new computer, I say this is going to be the last one I'm going to buy. I'm driving around, just FYI now, in a red Thunderbird convertible.
Okay. Well, that's pretty nice. I think that's a pretty...
Some of us stay, and I pay cash for it.
Yeah, that's good.
Some of us stay up on things, if you look at what's going on in the Middle East and around the world and the imperial presidency that we're dealing with, you need to be a little bit afraid of some things.
Agreed. I don't think we stop fighting the fight, but we don't live in fear. That's not right either.
No, I don't think so either. And I just kind of felt, I'm trying to work on my backyard. And when I heard that, the comments about the volcanoes and people being worried, I don't like being dumped in with some of the rest of the population. You know, I know a lot of people operate out of fear. But I'm not operating out of fear, number one. And number two, I'm paying attention to what's going on in the world and here.
Well, good for you. Good for you. But people do. Most human beings operate out of fear. So I'm glad you're not one of them.
Okay.
Pat, thank you, and happy first day of summer.
Thank you. Same to you.
Enjoy your ride and your sweet Thunderbird, okay?
Yeah, I'll put the top down today.
Good. Perfect. All right.
Okay.
Have fun. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're going to take our final break, and we'll have a nice segment coming back. Hey, the board's clear. If you have been waiting to ring in, if you have a comment or a question, love to hear from you right now at 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us again. If you have any comments, questions, by golly, shoot them over to us during the week. At PetzoFinancial.com. And also there we've got articles, calculators to help you with your financial planning. And for those of you, I did mislead you a little bit. Amy is Amy Jones, who is our tech guru and works our email and all email our website. She has told me again, for those that are wanting to get the back podcasts, you can't go back more than 4 weeks. We just can't. We're going to try to store some more. We're buying some more space. But it's really the website we have, it's just weird. But it should be super cheap. We're trying to do some things. She's working on it and to get a few more. But the easiest way to do that is just simply go to the Apple Store and then basically through on Petzo and then get set up. It'll do an automatic download just like every week, bang, bang, bang. And then you can keep them there. So just get that set up there. So anyway, I apologize for those who said, hey, who I told, go to the Apple Store and you can get all the back ones. You can't. You can't get the back ones unless you have them on your phone. And you can do that by setting it up to do that. So at any rate, that's enough of that nonsense. Now, as we've talked about today, we talked about redefining risk. We talked about retirement income discussion and why it's so important to be redefining risk and thinking about it as rising streams of income. And we're going to keep talking about that and keep talking about that. In a world where we are always fixated, day in and day out, the noise is always that we are going to be talking about the price movement of the great corporations of the world. That's the news. It isn't really informative. It's just they have to have stuff to talk about. And so they babble all day long about little price movements caused by what? You know, the Fed, the this, the Iraq, is it Ukraine? And it's just this nonsensical back and forth. Is high-frequency trading going to destroy the market? Is it legal? People write books, make millions of dollars. Great, good for them. Fine, wonderful. Wonderful. The fact of the matter is the market is more transparent and far cheaper for the average person to trade than certainly at any time in my career. Not even close. Not even close. It isn't always totally fair because there's always in all industries, in all places, and at all times, people who are trying to find a way around, get an edge, if you will. But it's never been better. But it's also never, in my mind, been more difficult to think long-term, to think about where we're going 10, 20, 30 years from now, where the great corporations who have raised their income, meaning dividends, to their shareholders for decades, what that's going to look like in 10 years or 20 years without thinking of and focusing on the day-to-day fluctuations. It's pointless. But I also recognize, and you need to, that the price movement is what gives us the great bargains. It's not the enemy. You see it as the enemy. And it perhaps is the enemy to good behavior in investments, right? It's what makes it harder to behave well. But it is what gives us the bargains. When there is a price break in the great corporations, or one or two of them, and you can buy rising streams of income at a bargain. That, in my mind, is the essence of great investing. Not good investing, great investing. And it's way beyond the noise of the in and out and what's going on and why did the market go up 20 points. Take it easy. Relax. Life is actually good. And it's the first day of summer. So have a cold one and sit back and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzl and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.